to dry cough. Yeah. Hey guys, welcome back to the Young Turks. We have a completely different panel, and it's going to be awesome. It's the Female Power Hour.
It is.
Yes. Maitha Alhassan and Ambria Allen join me, and I'm really glad that you ladies are here because the first story is a doozy. Obviously, you guys are aware that there's a lot going on with sexual assault allegations, both impacting the rich and powerful in Hollywood, but also now members of Congress are being accused. And it's one of the most, I don't know, relevant topics. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's aware of what's going on. But there's one individual who thinks that, hey, despite the way a lot of people are feeling victimized right now, I'm going to go ahead and push these, like, insanely misogynistic stereotypes. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. Later on in the show, we're also going to talk about what Trump is doing to boost his approval ratings. It has a lot to do with trying to sell weapons to foreign countries. I don't know how that helps boost your approval ratings among Americans, but we'll talk about that. And then later on, we will also discuss the first ever digital pill that has been approved by the FDA. What is it? There are some privacy concerns, so we'll dig deep in that story. So are you guys ready?
Let's.
All right, let's do it. Gene Simmons, who was the bassist for Kiss, is not a delightful individual. That has already been established. But he has further proven that point with his latest book and comments that he made about women to the New York Post while he was promoting his book. Now, the comments that have some people raising their eyebrows go as follows. He said, "Women have a choice. They can dress in a potato sack or in potato sacks, but as soon as they pretty themselves up with lipstick, lift and separate them and point them in our general direction, they're gonna get a response. Guys are jackasses. We will buy them mansions and houses all because of sex." So let me give you more context about, you know, why he made that statement. His new book has to do with becoming powerful, using the power you have, wielding the power you have. And his argument is, women are powerful because they can manipulate people using their sexuality. If they're attractive enough, they can get whatever they want. That is the point that he's trying to make here. He also said, in regard to women who want to have careers and raise a family, get over your biological urges. It's natural to want to have kids, but sorry, you can't have it both ways. You have to commit to either career or family. It's very difficult to have both. Okay, so there is a follow-up to all of this, but I want to open it up to you guys.
This is like the apex of mansplaining, if I've ever seen it. And it's also not a new concept or a new argument. There was a book that came out in 2011 called Erotic Capital, The Power of Attraction from the Boardroom to the Bedroom by this woman named Catherine Hakim. And the problem with this is twofold. One is, like, if you invest in the idea of erotic capital, let's just say we're following this through line, it's something you invest in that's going to depreciate in value, right? With the way that aesthetics are set up for women, like incredibly unfair. And then two, it's a double bind, which is if you are attractive, then you have to deal with the sexual harassment angle. So you really don't move forward. And if you use that capital to get something, you're getting still 70 cents on the dollar to a man's dollar.
Right. Well, I think what's also interesting is for the women who do feel comfortable wielding that power, because there's a little element of truth to what he said. I'm not going to deny it. Yes, I do think that attractive women could use that power to get certain things, but that actually backfires significantly.
All the time.
Because you will be accused of not earning something based on your mind or merits. It's, she must have done XYZ sexual favors. It's because she's pretty. You will be degraded and belittled and minimized for the remainder of your career.
Sure, and women who are conventionally attractive who don't use that power are still accused
That's right.
And it also penalizes women who are not conventionally attractive, right? So where do they fare in this logic that he's outlined? It's also interesting that the argument still maintains that men are distributing the power, right? So you can get power by getting it from us, right? Like we're still doling it out.
That's such a good point. Right? You can get that power if you present yourself in a way that we like.
Yeah.
That's essentially what he's saying there. And so he recently went on the Today Show. And the fine ladies at the Today Show called him out on his comments. And here's what he had to say. Take a look.
Right, you were quoted in the New York Post as saying this. You ready?
Of course. These are
your words.
Yep.
Women have a choice. They can dress in potato sacks. But as soon as they pretty themselves up with lipsticks, lift and separate them, and point them in our general direction, they're going to get a response.
Blah, blah, blah. So here's the reality. I'm aware of the rules. I didn't create them. So you can try this yourself. I'm not saying life is fair. What I'm saying is the male of the species is visually
stimulated.
That's life. And so you have power. But the power of being a female, and you can access that power to make more money.
Wait. So given the climate, given everything that's going on, you're saying that if a woman dresses the way she wants,
right.
Kath dresses the way she wants,
yep.
I'm dressing the way I want, I'm not doing it to get a reaction from Dave or
we can
from
argue
you.
About that once we get off stage. If you were on a tropical island, the chances are you probably wouldn't put on lipstick. We appreciate it. We want you to be as attractive as possible for us and for each other. So this is not politically correct conversation, folks. Dress in a potato sack.
Why?
Walk out on the street.
Why would I dress in a potato sack?
You might like
no,
potato sacks.
No, I'm saying you have the choice in life.
But why would I have to make that choice?
I'm not being confrontational. I'm on your side. I want women to have all the power they can have. What I'm pointing out is your looks, how you dress, how you present yourself is an outreach, an extension of the power that you have. We can't do that. Men can't do that. We have to build skyscrapers and thereby try to be more attractive to you. Your actual female self is your power. So you have a choice of implementing that power or not. That's up to you.
I mean,
it's up to us.
Yeah. But you made a really good point, which is not only are men in this framework the purveyors of distributing power, but they are defining what power looks like. Because in this model, it's not power, it's domination.
Yeah.
It's that agency to be able to have power over somebody and to be able to manipulate them. So for me, I have a different definition of power, and it doesn't fit within that framework because I don't want to live by patriarchy. And at the end of the day, it's also dangerous to men. I mean, this is what he was saying, too. We have to build skyscrapers to be attractive to you. Who wants to live within that kind of system where we're all degraded and reduced down to either our looks or our ability to exploit people to make money?
Yeah, you know, I like that you brought that up because what he says isn't just insulting to women. It's also insulting to men because he thinks that all men are like these, like, primitive, like, apes that can't control themselves and they can't think for themselves and they have no interest in, you know, an intelligent conversation with a woman or her talents or anything. They're only interested in seeing a woman with lipstick and makeup and with... By the way, in his original statement, he talks about lifting and separating them and pointing them in our general direction. He's talking about breasts. He's talking about women's breasts, okay? He thinks that's all men care about, that that's the only thing that they ever act on. It's so incredibly, like, simplistic and insulting to both genders.
Yeah, and I mean, it assumes, one, him saying women need to resist our biological urges in terms of that dichotomy between motherhood and the workplace is ridiculous, but let's talk about men's biological urges, right? Like, if we're going to talk about urges. Also, it presents women as only being interested in men's ability to produce capital and not actually, like, interested, yes.
Right?
A lot of men don't build skyscrapers. Like, let's start there. Also, women like visual stimulation. Like,
I know.
All of these, there's so many wrong things. And, you know, his argument that, you know, I didn't make the rules. Like, I'm, that's such a lazy argument. Like, you're complicit. And men change rules when they don't like them. So you can't just say, like, it's just, this is what it is. So this is how we gotta be. Like, y'all change stuff when it benefits you. You're benefiting from this system. So.
Yeah, and not only is he benefiting, I mean, he's saying, I didn't write the rules. Okay, but you're reinforcing, you know, these stereotypes and you're profiting from it by pushing and reinforcing them in your book. It's just, he's not, again, necessarily like. Sure. I don't think that he is illustrative of, you know, men in general at all. But I do think that he symbolizes like this old school backwards way of thinking that, you know, some people still like push for.
Absolutely.
I had a number of conversations with people today about this particular story, mm-hmm. and with a lot of guys, to be specific. And, you know, a lot of guys are on the right side, but they're like, but isn't he also being more insulting toward men because he's saying that we can't control ourselves? Yeah, but he's also saying that the number one, like the main capital that women have is their breasts and their lipstick. Yeah.
But then does this strange, like, about face at the end of the interview where he's like, I'm on your side. I want you to have all the equality. And it's like, what?
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, the drugs and the years and the, you know.
The stuck in the 1980s
yeah, like,
look
I mean,
still.
Yeah, I get he's not like a representative sample, but some of these ideas are pretty salient.
I agree. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we have more stories for you, including Trump pushing other countries to buy U.S. weapons. And then later on in the show, we will discuss other news, including very rare consequences for a police officer who behaved poorly. So come right back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian, Maitha Alhassan, and Ambria Allen here with you. I wanted to do a quick live read to give you a sense of what you can look forward to on the network. So there's a new show of Aggressive Progressives available tomorrow night. All you need to do is go to tytnetwork.com/AP. And it was hosted by Jimmy Dore, Malcolm Fleschner, and Mark Thompson. Guests include Lee Camp and Nick Brana. So you should check it out. Also, Old School returns tonight, streams live for members at 9 p.m. Eastern time, tytnetwork.com/members live. And then a quick mention of TYT Lives for you. The Mad Lib wanted to respond to John's comments about the Bitchy Rich shirt. He said, that Bitchy Rich shirt really is dangerous. I have to plan my day around what part of town I'm going to be in when I wear that shirt out. Too strong. Also, Beth Haven says, I don't know about others, but I feel like the molestation accusations will result in little or no action other than to distract us all while the Congress screws us all on the obscene tax proposal. Beth, we are not going to be distracted. We will talk about both issues as we did on the show today. So have a little bit of faith. I hope that there will be some consequences for these predators, and we will defeat that tax bill, especially considering what they're trying to do with the Affordable Care Act. All right, let's move on to some other news. Donald Trump just finished his tour of Asia, and there were a lot of ceremonies, a lot of traditional things happened. There were a couple of leaders in Asia that were concerned that not enough policy was hashed out, not enough in terms of foreign relations was hashed out. However, there was one thing that Trump really dwelled on during his trip, and that was whether or not some of these countries would buy U.S. weapons. So Bloomberg reported on this, and I thought it was fascinating because, as we all know, Trump is planning on running for re-election, and he wants credit for achieving things. But legislatively speaking, he hasn't really accomplished anything at all. And so he tries to find these other ways of doing things that he can get credit for. And he believes that selling weapons to countries like Vietnam will somehow boost his approval ratings and get Americans to vote for him. So according to sources who spoke to Bloomberg, sources who are familiar with these conversations that Trump had with the leader of Vietnam, he said that he needed quick wins. He told his team in the room because he'd be running for re-election before anyone realized. And weapon sales, in Trump's view, are good for his approval ratings. Trump also rarely sat down in a country without pointing out that buying a few F-18s would go a long way toward winning his heart. He told the story repeatedly of how a U.S.-sold missile defense system had knocked down a rocket targeting an airport in Saudi Arabia. So he was trying to, you know, make these sales. But I don't know if the sources misspoke or if Trump is really that dumb to think that, like, American citizens care about these weapon sales. No, private contractors do. Private contractors want it. And so if he's looking to get their support, he'll have that. By the way, Vietnam is not buying more of our weapons or, you know, defense capabilities or anything like that. But it's just, it's interesting how his mind works or doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, this is so interesting that he thinks, like, the big value that he can offer as a businessman is to transition into a global salesman for military and private contracting firms,
right,
that are tied to the U.S. government in some sort of way through, like, Goldman Sachs and Boeing, and that this will be appealing to voters. To some degree, I do think it is ludicrous, but to another degree, I do think he does calculate well in understanding how his base forms scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a script
Absolutely.
About securitization and the U.S.'s role in leading securitization. And what is always a big win for him is saying that he's going to put more money into the military as if, like,
yeah,
as if it's proven that we have no resources in our military, even though, like, we quote-unquote trump the next 10 countries below us in terms of military force and expenditures. So this still wins big with his base. Now, the question should be, and the intervention that should be made is, why his base, or why people are not seeing that he's just representing big corporations in place of the little guy?
Yeah.
So I think this is the kind of work that we need to do as people on the margins, on the left, or even people moderate center, instead of, like, looking at his grammar mistakes on Twitter, is, like, really speaking to that.
Yeah. So just real quick, Ambria, because I know you want to jump in. Back in September, the Trump administration started working on a proposal that would essentially move the issue of weapon sales to foreign countries from the State Department to the Commerce Department. Mm. And the whole point of that is to further deregulate weapons manufacturers being able to sell weapons to foreign countries. And so, as you know, a lot of these weapons end up in the hands of our enemies, which is why it's important that the State Department is involved, because they have a pulse on some of these issues, who some of the biggest threats are. The Commerce Department does not deal with our foreign enemies. They deal with commerce. And so it's all about, boosting sales for these weapons manufacturers. I mean, I guess the best export that we have here in the United States is our gun culture. So why not go ahead and sell
right.
our guns to other countries? You're right. You look at everything in the context of what's going on. And what it really does is it helps weapons manufacturers. Doesn't really help the American voter. But why is it so hard? Like, why do you have to spell it out? It's, like, so obvious. Like, don't they sit and think about, oh, how is it going to benefit me if Vietnam buys more of our weapons? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think it's the work that you have to do to kind of get down to those nuggets. And I think there's this tendency, particularly with his voters, to kind of oversimplify this kind of American symbolism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, American military guns, right? So if you're going to shoot down rockets, you're going to shoot them down with American machinery, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's something in America equaling this kind of, like, force, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if all of the other theoretical work that you have to do underneath that argument doesn't make sense, you kind of are just tying together these words, right? American military guns. And that symbolizes America as a force. I feel like when he first got to the first leg of his tour, all he did was talk about America as a force. And this is in somebody else's country,
right?
So there's a way in which these themes kind of travel with him, and they're very salient with his base.
Right, and it is part of also his America First messaging, which is
anywhere
you go, they're going to respect us because we are coming around with guns trying to force you to buy our weaponry, and I'm going to force the issue of respecting America in ways that we've never been respected before on the global stage, which is, again, just a ridiculous claim to be made, but it speaks to his voters and the idea of being respected through your gun, as phallic as it may be. Does communicate and does resonate with his base. But I would say, like, some points and connections we could make is that not only does militarizing not keep you safe, you know, adding more weapons across the board, it influences people to build up stockpiles as a form of defense that could be easily triggered into war. We've seen that many times throughout history. But the other thing is that those weapons are used in really dramatically brutal ways. Like, we gave Saudi Arabia $110 billion, and they are leading one of the most grotesque wars in Yemen that is turning into one of the worst humanitarian disasters.
We are involved in that war.
Absolutely.
We are doing drone strikes in Yemen to help Saudi Arabia, which is incredible because some of Trump's most avid supporters were furious about, you know, the relationship that the United States had with Saudi Arabia prior to him getting elected. Well, he got elected, and guess what? He has further emboldened Saudi Arabia. He is extending U.S. military intervention in Yemen. I mean, it's just he has not followed through on a lot of the big issues that his base said that they cared about.
Right. And taking the money and putting American expenditures and putting the big bets on selling weapons and building up our military power means that you're taking from social programs, you're taking from healthcare, you're taking from education. That's why we're deregulating education. That's why we have no money for it, right? And that's why it seems inconceivable to pay towards single payer healthcare. But it actually is conceivable if we are one of the most wealthy nations on this earth. We were just in Portugal, which was one of the poorest countries in Europe and has an incredible healthcare system.
And education system.
And education system. I mean, it's something that Martin Luther King said in 1967 in his speech, calling out, condemning the U.S.'s war in Vietnam, which is the amount of money it takes to kill one person in Vietnam is so, like, astronomically huge compared to how little is spent on poor folks in the U.S.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he affects no change that will actually affect change in the U.S. on this tour, right? There's no bilateral trade agreements, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't extract any major concessions from China. He does nothing to arrest the nuclear program in North Korea. Like, all of these things that matter.
Right.
None of that gets done. We're talking about guns.
I know. But, I mean, he said that it was the best trip that any U.S. president has ever had.
It looked fun.
Right.
You know, it looked really fun because he wasn't working.
Yeah, good clothes. Talking about golf instead of human rights is basically what was said.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to some happenings here in the United States. A sheriff in Georgia has been suspended after the governor, Nathan Deal, decided to suspend him following the sheriff signing off on the search of 900 high school students while police officers were looking for drug paraphernalia. No drug paraphernalia was found. However, these students were on lockdown for hours. Their cell phones were taken away from them. And the searches were much more invasive than what you would expect. And so a grand jury did indict the police officer that I'm talking about, the sheriff. His name is Jeff Hobby. And two deputies in connection with the search at Worth County High School. Hobby faces two counts of false imprisonment, one count of sexual battery, a charge of violating his oath of office. Now, according to the lawsuit, Hobby arrived at the school with a target list. He's looking for students who have drugs on them. Target list of 13 students that he suspected of having drugs. Only three of the listed students were at school that day, and Hobby had them brought to the administrative offices and searched. But that wasn't good enough for him. He decided, no, I want to go ahead and search 900 students. Think about what a gigantic waste of time and resources that is. They didn't find any drugs. No drug paraphernalia whatsoever, besides which, really, you're going to focus all your attention on this issue? Okay. The lawsuit says Hobby then put the entire school on lockdown. Students were confined to classrooms, hallways, and the gym. Their cell phones were taken away so they couldn't even call their parents. And so this is not looking good because there is a lawsuit filed by the parents of some of these students because they had their genitals touched. In some cases, they had their, you know, clothes taken off or certain articles of clothing lifted in front of other students, and it was humiliating. I mean, this is a very clear abuse of power, so much so that the governor of Georgia had to intervene and suspend this guy.
Yeah. I think this is a consequence of our addiction to policing and our addiction to the surveillance state. I mean, and just to even think back to my own high school experience, the fact that we had a cop on campus all the time, that most schools had a list of clothing that you couldn't wear because it was like gang affiliated, right? Like shoelace colors, right?
Yeah, it's funny. At my school, we didn't have like the gang colors or anything, but it was more, there was way more emphasis on the way female students dressed, right? And so if we can see your shoulders, you are you're a harlot, and you must be taken to the principal's office, that kind of stuff. But you're right, like we didn't have a police officer. We had like a really like jolly like security guard guy named Jerry that I have fond memories
nice.
Of. Right? He was really nice, but we never felt like we were on lockdown or being watched. We weren't treated as criminals. And I think when students are treated this way, remember, they're young, their brains are still developing. Yeah. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think.
Right, yeah. right.
And there's ways. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we had an officer in uniform with his police car right in front of the entrance to the high school. Mm-hmm. So it's already priming our brains to expect that encounter with mm-hmm. the police. And that, again, not only criminalized, but you're on your toes because you think that you can possibly do something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not it is suspecting them of drugs they don't have, but putting them in positions where they're made vulnerable and suspected of being a criminal, when this starts young, like you said, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's also definitely part of a targeted effort to certain schools, like public schools. This doesn't happen at private schools. I don't see this happening at all.
Absolutely, and I'm sure, I guess this all started with a complaint from either a set of parents who were concerned about drugs at the school. If you've narrowed it down to a list of 13 students, you can go talk to them and their
right,
parents.
Right,
I'm sure
right.
that's what would have been done if the school were right. a private school, and that is an assumption. But there are ways of doing drug sweeps that are lawful, right? So this is both like incompetence and an overreach. So drug sweeps, they bring the dogs in. They don't pull students out of class. You don't interrupt. Students are here to learn.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? So when you interrupt that process, it better be for good reason. This is not good reason. And I just feel like with minors, there's issues of like consent, with their bodies being touched in terms of these searches.
They're minors, exactly. Yes.
So it's just, it's wildly inappropriate.
So I did a little more digging because I wanted to learn more about this sheriff. I wanted mm-hmm. to know if he had, a record of complaints, had he abused his power in the past. Mm-hmm. And I came across this little kernel of information that I wanted to share with you guys.
It's going to be juicy.
It's good. Let's go to graphic 29. The sheriff now stands accused by the local prosecutor of interfering with the criminal investigation into his teenage son, Zachary Lewis Hobby, who's 17. The younger Hobby was arrested on October 9th and charged with felony possession of marijuana with intent to distribute and criminal trespass. Sheriff Hobby and his wife, who is also an employee of the Worth County Sheriff's Office, barged into the room ostensibly to invoke the 17-year-old's Fifth Amendment rights for him. So he got involved.
This is more than juicy.
I mean, come on.
This is
come on.
This is like the Republican twist to the story
yeah,
of being against
much.
Trans rights and then being caught in a bathroom.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
that twist.
Yes.
You needed to be searching your own house for the drugs because that's apparently where they were.
I mean, who knows? Yeah. And maybe that's the reason why he was so overzealous with these other students. Because maybe he looks at his son and he's like, oh, look at what my son got into. It's because of the influence of some other person. So I don't know. I'm doing pop psychology here.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah, but
know
that's
what I'm
parenting.
About.
That's not
right?
like, that's not.
You don't, you don't get to abuse your power and treat other students that way. And it's just, it's amazing. Like he'll stick up for his son, but he'll go ahead and strip search other innocent students who should be on campus to learn. You're absolutely right.
900 students.
It's a lot of people. Yeah. All right, we got to take another break. Let's do so. When we come back, more fun stuff for you guys. So make sure you do come back. See you in a minute. It's crazy. Hey, guys, welcome back to TYT. A few TYT lives for you. By the way, guys, my voice is the way it is. People think I'm like smoking during the breaks. I'm not a smoker.
Why is that the thought, you guys?
I don't know. I got laryngitis and...
I can vouch. She had no voice last week.
Yeah, and Yeah, it's been hard because I've never gone through this before. But anyway, I'm getting better, I hope. So thank you for your concern. I am not smoking during the breaks. Control Left says, why would Vietnam need F-18s? I mean, when was the last time someone went to war with them? That's such a good point. Heiserberg says, hey, Donnie Tiny Hands, you want to make your approval ratings go through the roof? Quit. No 2 weeks notice, just quit. Erin Cannowell says, absolutely loving the panel of strong women's voices on TYT Live tonight. Thank you.
I know. This is great.
Thank you.
We need.
All right. We have two more stories that I definitely want to get to, so let's go right to it. Several prisons and jails throughout the country have switched to a computer system that is beyond faulty, so faulty that after people deal with their arrest warrants, after people are adjudicated and their situation is supposed to go away, the computer system doesn't register it, and then they get badgered and harassed by police officers. And so the latest case has to do with Tennessee. In fact, the Shelby County Correctional Center in Tennessee is facing a class action lawsuit. But this is not the only correctional center facing a class action lawsuit. There are places in California and various other states that used the exact same system and ran into a number of problems. People ended up spending weeks behind bars when they weren't supposed to, sometimes for minor infractions, in most cases after they haven't even been found guilty or convicted of anything. I'll give you one example. This is out of Tennessee. Plaintiff Lakeisha McCoy claims the faulty computer system caused a warrant for her arrest to be acted on multiple times after she paid her bond for an alleged parole violation and was released from police custody. However, the computer system allegedly never registered her release. A few days later, police were back banging on her window, according to the suit, and tried to re-arrest her several times. So there, again, have been complaints about this for quite some time now. The computer system that they're using is known as the Odyssey Case Management System. And the officials at this particular correctional facility were warned that it was deeply flawed and they would run into problems, but they decided to utilize it anyway. And I guess the big selling point is that this computer system is supposed to improve communications with other correctional facilities in other states. But so far, we've only seen the downsides.
Yeah,
I think that example that you shared points to one of the many downsides, which is just increased police encounters. That escalation can be deadly in certain communities, right? I don't want to be an alarmist about that, but it's a very grave reality. I think also in terms of the lawsuits, I feel like citizens are on the hook for this, right? Yeah. Ultimately, something that could have been remedied, right, because there were warnings, that we end up paying for it, right? That all of these police mistakes, the citizens end up having to pay for it, which is problematic.
And you also pay for, you know, the resources that it takes to keep someone behind bars.
Right.
By the way, what I read you as an example was bad, but there are cases that are even worse. The computer system registered completely innocent people as sex offenders in some cases.
Wow. Yeah.
And then also, keep in mind, like, if you're in jail when you are not supposed to be in jail for a week, 2 weeks, you're away from your job. You are away from your family. You could lose your job. In most cases, you will lose your job if that happens. And so it's just devastating for the lives of all these like innocent people who dealt with consequences that they didn't deserve. Yeah. And if the correctional facility was warned ahead of time, and there were stories dating back to 2 years ago that this was going to happen, then why were they so like nonchalant about that, right? You're toying with people's lives. We should have as much, thought, and people should be as careful as possible before switching over to a new system, especially when it deals with, you know, the criminal justice system.
Yeah. Well, because in America, if you are imprisoned or you're convicted or you're arrested, you automatically lose some sense of your citizenship. Mm-hmm. You're either a second class citizen or you descend even further down, right? Like if you have a felony, you can't vote anymore. So there's a stigma attached to being a part of the criminal justice system as somebody who has been convicted or criminalized of something, right? So their lives are disposable, right? So they wouldn't, they probably didn't even act as quick as they could have in those circumstances where somebody is being held for, supposed to be held for 2 days and then held for 2 weeks. And I'm sure he protested against it. And I'm sure they ignored his, I'm sure they ignored his claims. And the woman who had already paid bond was repeatedly told to pay for a bond she had paid that long time prior. But again, their view is not trustworthy because they've had this encounter with the criminal justice system. And again, I should just also divulge, because I am actually a prison abolitionist. So I know that takes me to a far left side, but in these sort of circumstances, holding people longer, making them pay, this doesn't solve those issues at hand. It doesn't solve the issue of preventing somebody from coming back into the system and keeping them longer. I mean, this is why a like Odyssey case management system ends up becoming the logic, because they have such a huge tentacle that some sort of system is needed, like you said, to have some sort of coordination, because it's just so massive.
It is, it is. And we do imprison more people than any other country in the world. And our recidivism rate is incredibly high. We have repeat offenders. And it's because a lot of times nonviolent people get locked away and they, you know, they learn criminal habits while they're behind bars, because you, unfortunately, in some cases, need those habits to survive, right? You know, I think the most, in my opinion, the best example of how society looks at prisoners as throwaways is how Congress, even now, refuses to address the issue of prison rape, right? They just refuse to address it. They don't care, right? And I don't know if it's a strong and unfair thing to say that Americans don't care, but prison rape is common. Everyone knows that it happens, and nothing's ever done about it because they're looked upon as untrustworthy, as the throwaways of society.
And if you do anything to your jumpsuit, you can be convicted of vandalism to public property.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean,
prison is an industry, right?
No,
so,
it definitely is one.
Yeah, we benefit from mass incarceration. So we aren't gonna do anything to remedy those issues.
Yeah. All right, we have 5 more minutes, and this next story I've been dying to get to, so let's do it. The FDA has approved the first digital pill to be used here in the United States. Now, what does that mean? What is a digital pill? Well, the whole idea behind this is there is a so-called digital component to a prescription drug that would allow your doctor to check in on you and make sure that you are taking your drugs as prescribed. Now, the thought process behind why such a technology would be needed is that in a lot of cases, people don't take their prescription drugs as they're supposed to. They will skip the drug, or they'll skip days, or just stop taking it altogether. And that ends up costing the healthcare system a lot more, because their condition will worsen and it'll cost more to treat them. Now, the idea is, well, maybe some people are just forgetting to take their drugs, and this could be a useful tool. And for the moment being, everything is very voluntary. Now, patients who agree to take the digital medication, a version of the antipsychotic Abilify, can sign consent forms allowing their doctors and up to 4 other people, including family members, to receive electronic data showing the date and time pills are ingested. Also, a smartphone app will let them block recipients anytime they change their mind. So this smartphone app also allows them to sign in and talk about how they're feeling at different parts of the day after they take the drug. The technology could potentially be used to monitor whether post-surgical patients took too much opioid medication, or clinical trial patients correctly took drugs being tested. So this all has to do with a sensor. It contains copper, magnesium, and silicone. These are all ingredients that are safe and found in foods, and it generates an electrical signal when splashed by stomach fluid. So I wanted to kind of open this up to you guys and get your sense of whether this is a good thing or bad thing. Clearly, there are privacy concerns. That is a concern that I have. And, you know, some insurance companies might also think about giving people discounts if they're willing to sign on to this and allow their doctors to monitor their drug-taking behavior. I find that problematic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the Black Mirror is not in the future. It's now. It totally is. And it was really interesting that they're starting with schizophrenia patients who have issues of paranoia, of thinking somebody's out to get them. I mean, this article was like Digital Pill Big Brother. And the chairman of psychiatry at Columbia, he said something interesting. He said there's an irony in it being given to people with mental disorders that can include delusions. It's like a biomedical Big Brother. So, I mean, I'm always on the fence around this stuff, especially high-tech solutions that low-tech problem solutions haven't been thought through. Mm-hmm. One thing, I went to a functional doctor, or I was inquiring about this functional doctor, and they asked if I could bring somebody with me so I could have an accountability partner as part of my journey towards my medical healing. And so I wonder if that's a different kind of solution that doesn't require people ingesting something and having a sensor that is also attached to a patch that is triggering some sort of app on your phone that you need to be responsible for updating, like, your emotions towards the pill-taking process.
I just feel like, and again, right now everything is super voluntary. Mm, right. This is in its infancy in the U.S., but I just worry about things getting out of hand. It just sounds too invasive to me.
Absolutely. It sounds really invasive. It sounds like a lot of steps. So the folks that it would even help, like elderly folks who need help doing this, they're not going to strap something to themselves and follow an app. And it almost creates another issue.
Yeah.
So again, it just seems a little problematic.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. And for people who think that this is actually great and it's the future, cool. I just hope it remains voluntary, and I hope that insurance companies don't start, you know, coercing us.
Yeah, incentivizing it in ways that...
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching the show. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but if you are a member, there'll be a post-game show for you, so make sure you check that out. If you are not a member, you can join by going to tytnetwork.com/join. And I want to thank the awesome ladies that joined me for the show today, Maitha Alhassan, Ambria Allen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was so great being with you.
Yeah, I liked it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you soon.